Welcome to the Gleeman's Apprentice, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am your Gleeman, Twitch Avery.
And I am his apprentice, Mandy Cat.
Travel in the wastelands in search of every story. The Gleeman's goes to find tales of bravery and glory. Pass along achievements accomplished by mighty folks. The telling of the wheel made up by different spokes. He comes across a long last singing whose clothes are tattered and worn. Invited her on his journey.
As Mandy Cat has already read the first four books of the series, there are always potential spoilers up through The Shadow Rising.
And after that, I'll be reading the rest of the books for the very first time with my Gleeman, Twitch.
All right, welcome back to another episode of The Gleeman's Apprentice. How are you doing today, Mandy Cat?
Good. I'm recovering from a week-long road trip out west that was wonderful.
I bet it was gorgeous, huh?
It was. It was perfect. We made it to, was it Cannon Beach, where the Goonies, the end scene, where One-Eyed Willie's ship comes out?
Yeah.
Haystack Rock. It was wonderful.
Nice.
Also, Bryce's and Merle's first time seeing the ocean, so they both enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. You were saying this was Bryce's first time seeing mountains as well, right?
Yeah. He kept asking, we're going through North Dakota, you get to the Badlands, Theodore Roosevelt National Park. He's like, wow, these are mountains? And we're like, no, these are Badlands. You've seen Badlands before. And then the whole way, he keeps, you know, Montana's a pretty long state. We're getting to Billings, and I'm finally like, Bryce, look out there. What's the difference? Because you can finally see a huge mountain with some snow on it. He's like, oh.
That's what a mountain
is. Yeah. So it was, we had really excellent weather. We did have one mouse that decided to hitchhike in our car, probably from Montana.
Ugh.
What do? Kind of chewed through some dog treats and a couple of silicone bowls we had food in, but... let's just say Target has been neutralized since coming home.
Right on?
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, otherwise, we're back adjusting to hot weather, actually. We had pretty moderate weather on that trip.
It's been really hot here.
How you doing, Twitch?
I am doing excellent. Yeah, I'm doing great. I was on the Leafcast watching area last week.
Cool.
And that was fun. And the normal... drawer, one of the normal artists that draws the clues wasn't able to make it this month, so this guy from Discord, Skeeter, jumped in, and I was the one that was guessing for him, and we killed it.
Good job.
So,
congratulations.
So that was fun. I was bummed you weren't able to make it, but I understand. I would think I probably would have rather been driving to Oregon as well. So
yeah.
All right, so we are doing another three chapters today. Chapter 9...
10 and 11.
9, 10, and 11. So chapter 9 is...
Decisions. Yeah, and it starts out with the one symbol that strikes me the most, Lanfear's.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, we all know what that means, her little moon and star.
Yeah.
So, starting off, this chapter, it continues on exactly where the last chapter left, describing the next 3 days, kind of a summary. Basically, that's how it starts off. The 3 days following Elaine confessing her love for Rand, whatever. But we get a basic summary for all three. In general, these days were hot, the city slowed to a lethargic walk. And only the Outlanders continued as usual, possibly pushing themselves harder with the hours ticking by in order to survive. So Outlanders referring probably to the farmers who were being threatened with taxes?
Yeah, that's what I would assume.
Okay. Yep. So it's all just a recap and a description of the 3 days passing following the fun, like I said, of Elaine telling Rand of her fondness. Matt's realizing what happened with the cards was most definitely true, as all of the nobles and their friends quit playing with him, and even his cuddly girl flings are saying to him that it's been said it's dangerous to be alone with him.
Yeah.
So, poor guy.
Yeah, he's not even getting any loving.
No. Per usual, Matt is trying to avoid Moraine and sneak out of the city, but always finds himself back in the stone, back by Rand.
Yep, what did he say? The one person that he wished would ignore him was the one person that always seemed to be there every time he turned around.
Yep. He did actually go to that great holding once that Egwene had told him about, but he didn't enter, saying to himself, I'd have to be the biggest, bloodiest fool in the world. Yeah. And then I just think, well, yeah.
Yeah.
We know you are. So it's just a matter of time.
You're a lovable fool, but you are definitely a fool.
Jumping to Perrin's summary, I guess. He's haunting inns to listen to rumors, trying to find anything to get Fael out of Dodge and safe and sound away from the Taviren and interested in something new. He notes most of the rumors are outdated twistings of the truth, which sounds like that's what a rumor often is,
yeah.
Such as Sawchin and Artur Hawkwing's armies coming back. He does hear the rumors of her hometown Saldia and Mazrim Tazim? The false dragon.
Mazrim Taim.
Okay. Being safely in Aes Sedai hands, which I made a huge star. Safe in Aes Sedai hands? Unless it's Black Aja Aes Sedai.
Oh,
Perrin, what you don't know.
We do know about that one plot that they were talking about.
Yeah. And I made a note when I wrote this, I feel like that description alone seals the deal, and Joya had been telling the truth, because Perrin thinks he's safe in Aes Sedai hands. I'm like, Oh, crap. We'll get that in another book, I guess. description of Egwene and Nynaeve. They continued questioning Amako and Joya, but to no avail. Even telling Amako what Joya said, or telling Joya what Amako said, in terms of going to Tanjiko or Saldia. And Amako seemed eager to please, but Joya really gave me this impression that she's just a witch. She's sharing nothing. But at one point said, go to Tanjiko if you wish. It is an uncomfortable city now, I hear. The king holds little more than the city itself. And I understand the Panarch has ceased keeping civil order. Great.
Yeah,
this is another one where I'm like, she's probably telling the truth on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I mean, there are certain... there are times when telling the truth, especially for Black Aja, are probably just as convenient,
yes.
You know, and do just as much damage as telling a lie.
For sure. There's no word from Tarvalon about how to proceed, and Egwene is worrying that Tanjiko could be a trap. On the bright side, Avienda began hanging out more, and she and Egwene are besties, which is cute.
Yeah.
One interesting cultural difference was Egwene was taking a bath when Avienda walked in and was shocked about the amount of water Egwene was wasting with her bath.
Yeah, she had no problem with walking in on her naked.
No.
In fact, when she realized that Egwene was uncomfortable with it, she went ahead and stripped down too. She just couldn't imagine that
it's hilarious.
You would waste all that water. You would dirty all of that water because water is so precious in the Aiel Waste.
Yeah. I do love that image of her just stripping down and being like, I'll keep talking with you so you know it's we're cool.
I love that image too.
Yeah. Avienda is confused why Elaine hasn't attacked Berlaine yet to solve the issue of, you know, who gets Rand. She even says, it's best simply to challenge her and kill her. And I'm like, oh, is that how we do it?
Cool. Yeah, yeah. She's like, it would be against my honor or against a maiden's honor to kill a non-warrior, but you aren't a warrior, and so that's fine. You could totally kill her. Challenge her to knives.
Go for it. Elaine steals every spare moment with Rand, finding secluded corners and making out when they can. Elaine is adjusting to doing whatever she wants, despite watching Aiel guards and disregarding her thoughts of what Queen Mother would think. Both she and Rand know she will soon be leaving for Tanjiko, so I think they're just making puppy love time best. And Rand has asked her some governing advice, which she provided, but does encourage him to keep her assistance discreet.
Yeah.
So she's actually a great ruler. We're getting that out of her. She knows it's not about glory, it's about presentation. And
we've gotten from many different POVs and many different people, you know, just chatting, that Queen Morghese is a very good queen. She's really good at ruling her nation.
Yeah.
And so we have to assume that she taught Elaine a lot, you know, before she went off to the White Tower. And so, yeah, I imagine Elaine would probably be a really good ruler. And we've already seen her be kind of like the peacekeeper, moderator between Egwene and Nynaeve.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that she would have good advice for Rand, because he doesn't know anything about leading, you know? But all of a sudden, he's a king of a nation that, you know, 10 months ago, he never thought he'd see.
Right.
So.
Rand continues meeting with high lords in his chambers, and also he goes about surprising small gatherings of high lords that Tom had ferreted out. Basically, Tom has continued trying to help Rand to figure out, hey, go ahead and this guy are meeting and crash it. And this serves to make them question how much Rand knows, right?
Oh, yeah.
And also made him realize it's one day closer to them killing him, because they are meeting separately and basically plotting, right?
Yes.
Rand is with Mylan and Sunanam, some of the High Lords we met previously, even though I didn't name them at the time, that they'd been the ones really manipulating Rand regarding Grain and Nynaeve. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
They claim they've done as told, but Rand is angered because they haven't. And they're in cahoots with High Lord Taurian.
Taurian.
Whom Rand detests. So Rand ends the conflict by insisting, you will go to Bear Lane to create a treaty. If that's undone by tomorrow, both of you guys will be hanged.
Yep. I'm just going to start hanging High Lords 2x2 every day. If you guys don't do what I tell you to do, then I'm just going to hang you.
I'm like, that's a little Dany Targaryen coming out.
And then he thinks to himself, he's like, who the hell am I to just order these people, you know, to end these people's lives? But I'm going to do it. And I know I'm going to do it if they make me.
Yeah, and it's also at the same time, it's like, okay, well, this might speed along their desire to kill you. But it's also nice that Rand is growing some leadership balls.
Yeah, no, very much so. I completely agree with that.
So Rand is lost in his thoughts, convincing himself he's not mad yet, thinking through prophecies marking him Dragon Reborn, still wondering what the heck is a dragon. And he's in his room thinking these heavy thoughts when a woman's voice appears behind him. You are changed from when I last saw you. Stronger. Harder. Oh my gosh, what an innuendo, and it is the so-called Selene, who we all know is Lanfear, and Rand is delighted.
He's like, Selene, oh my gosh, where have you been? I haven't seen you for such a long time. I'm so excited. He's like a little puppy when you walk in the door from being gone for 6 hours straight. And
yeah. Like, hey. And in a nutshell, she's trying to give it to him real, and he's still just lost in puppy love land.
Yeah.
So she's all, nope, I go where I wish, and there's a strange comment. You have been marked. And then she quickly says, well, you were mine now and forevermore. And she calls anyone else in his life a caretaker. So I assume she's referring to Elaine. He's marked by Elaine's love.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say so.
Rand goes on with more sweet remembrance of their previous time together. It's sort of a breakup speech in a way.
Yeah.
And he wants her to stay safe in the stone until things are settled so she can return to her estates in Carrion. And again, I'm just like, you're clueless, Rand.
Yeah.
And even she goes, you have been marked, and laughs about estates in Carrion, saying, yeah, maybe that was true once upon a long time ago. And then this is where she literally reveals, I'm Lanfear.
Selene is only a name I sometimes use loose, Theron. The name I made my own is Lanfear. Dun-dun-dun. A poor joke, Selene. I soon make just about the Dark One as one of the Forsaken, and my name is Rand. So he didn't even believe
her
first.
He's like, in denial.
Whatever, you're not. That's funny, though. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, he's in such denial, and you can't be a forsaken. And she keeps going on. Yes, well, we call ourselves the chosen, and we will live forever. He finally gets the point when he realizes there's basically a wall behind him, but it's not a wall. She's using power, right? Yeah. And it even keeps him out of reach of Sidene.
Yeah, yeah. So she has shielded him from reaching the power.
Yes.
And she has basically wrapped him up in air.
Yes.
So he can't move, and
he can't reach the power.
And he can't channel.
Then Lanfear's appearance changes, becoming more mature and beautiful, and this confirms to readers her ability to change her looks, as if it wasn't really confirmed, but she did it right in front of his eyes, so yes, she can change to be even more pleasing.
Yeah.
She talks about waking from a dreamless sleep, and quotes something about, "I wouldn't kill you," and he's always... Has he always been in love with her, even before the blonde milksop? Of course, I got the word milksop. Eliana, I'm sure.
So she makes herself more beautiful, maybe a little bit older, riper. What does that even mean, riper? but then his stomach lurched. "Do you mean to kill me then? The light burn you, I kill you?" She spat incredulously. "Kill you? I mean to have you forever. You were mine long before that pale-haired milksop stole you. Before she ever saw you, you loved me. And you love power." For a moment, he felt dazed. The words sounded true. He knew they were true, but where had they come from? Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, that's like one of the first times he's really slipped. You know, Matt slips into old tongue all the time, but this was Rand's first direct connection to Luz.
Yeah, so what do you think happened there? Do you think Luz Theron took over for a second?
I think they're one and the same, aren't they?
I don't know.
Or do you think there's a mental block where he isn't remembering everything? I don't know how reincarnation works.
Yeah.
I don't. I do think that was a direct memory, though.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that.
Okay.
Like it's maybe the memories are coming back. How about I word it that way?
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Okay.
And then it does. He even describes Celine. Lanfear seemed as startled as he, but she recovered quickly and just kind of goes on. Basically, that it's a lot. I don't know if you want to do more of this summary, but Lanfear tells them the other Forsaken, naming Samael, Robin, Magadian, all want him dead because the Dark One may place him higher than them. And she insists this really is a true. they'd do that.
Yeah.
And the Dark One does probably like you more than them. But there's others who could teach him. But Rand has a hissy fit about being tutored by a Forsaken and announces he'll kill every last one of them. Some interesting context regarding the Dark One, in which even a Forsaken finds it blasphemy to say his name.
Yeah.
And as well, the Dark One knows a lot about what's going on. And she's in almost like a semi-orgy talking about how wonderful it is to meet the Dark One in person.
Yeah.
And that Rand can go to the Pit of Doom by Shaal Ghul to hear him and bathe in his presence for this wonderful experience. Yeah, that sounds like a little bit of Lord of the Rings, Mordor type of crap.
Yeah.
It's but magical. Okay, so apparently Dark One is charismatic.
I guess.
Even from the Pit of Doom. She continues about what she learned from the Dark One, that Asmodian will teach Rand how to wield the power. And then I go, who's Asmodian? I'm assuming another Forsaken.
I
need to keep a list, apparently.
You do.
Okay. And then Rand asserts that he was born to destroy the Dark One, not serve him. I said to myself, oh, sounds like another plot line coming up.
Yeah.
Rand versus the Dark, Rand making a choice. Anyway, Lanfear gets thoughtful about turning him to the Dark via other ways, which is, we know can happen. Rand assesses the situation. Sidene is out of reach as well as Kalendor. His belt knife is over on the table, and, you know, the lumps of metal on the fireplace that he melted in the last chapter. the man entering the door with a knife, Lanfear actually being forsaken. Lanfear goes on to tell him he's always been so stubborn. She brings that up a lot, by the way.
Yeah, she does.
Thinrand has the aha moment, a man with a knife coming through the door? And he can barely stay focused on the man, but knows to take action. So we all know it's a gray man. Lanfear is wondering, what are you frowning at? And then suddenly Rand can reach the true source in his flame sword and swipes the gray man's hand off that was attempting a kill stab.
Yeah.
Just like that. It was really, this was another smooth writing. If you're a skimming reader, you might have missed it.
Yeah. No, it's great. He does such a good job right there.
Okay, so Rand then asks Lanfear, well, why'd you distract me only for a gray man to assassinate? And then Lanfear insists, I don't use solace. Lanfear mentions that it seems like I was a day late in my judgment. And she still wants Rand to go with her. Rand has a second aha moment. The Aiel warriors would not have let the Grey Man in and demands from Lanfear to know, what did you do to them? And she only tells him, don't go out there. They may be testing your vulnerabilities, but not really defining who they is.
Yeah.
And that could kill him as well, but he leaves his chambers to a scene of madness.
All right. Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the way that chapter ends is like...
powerful.
Oh,
it starts
so good.
Off so slow. This is one of those build-up chapters, because yeah. The beginning is purposely slow. It's like lazy, hot days.
Yeah.
Here's what they're all doing since you last checked in.
Yep, it's just kind of... we're just kind of checking on each of the, you know, each of the protagonists to see, you know, what they're doing. But I did want to go ahead and ask you, what Forsaken have you heard about so far?
I tried making a list. I didn't go back or anything. So was it Agenor and Balthasar?
Balthamel?
Balthamel were in Eye of the World.
Yep, they were the ones that got killed at the end of the Eye of the World.
Killed. Ishmael also just recently died.
He was the one who was calling himself Balzamar, right?
Yep.
Okay, there's another one.
Lanfear is an obvious one.
Okay.
Samael. Gabriel. But is that his real name?
Gabriel.
That's his Queen Morgaze's love interest, but I don't think that's his Forsaken name.
Okay.
So, but you, then...
you just heard about two more.
I did, so sorry, I gotta go back to it. We got Raven.
Okay.
Or you could say Raven, I guess. Mogodian.
Mogidian.
It's rough.
It is.
Those are the other two.
And then you just... so you heard Raven. And we know where Samael is. Wait, there was one in Tyr. You remember him?
Ugh.
He was...
Salomon?
Salmon. But he was Bilal.
Oh, Bilal.
Was his Forsaken name?
Yeah.
So we know that there's a Forsaken in
a lot of the big cities.
Yeah, well, we know there's one in Ilion. We know Samael's in Ilion.
Gabriel
is in...
Caemlyn. And he could be Raven or Mogidian.
Okay. And then you just mentioned one more.
No. Did I?
Yeah, the one that Lanfear wants
to... Asmodian.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. What if he's the one in Caemlyn? And he's willing to teach Rand? Intense.
7, 8, 9. So that's 9 that you've heard.
Do you
about.
Think there's another woman?
There's 13.
Right.
We actually, do you know what? I'm not going to say, but I'm pretty sure in one of the previous books we've got how many men and how many women.
Forsaken. That sounds correct.
Okay, so if you remember that, I'll go ahead and tell you then. There are 5 female and 8 male Forsaken.
Oh, okay, so I'm mostly missing women.
Yeah, so we have 9. We know... in this list, Lanfear is a female, at least.
Yep.
We don't know about the others, right?
Nope.
I mean, we know Samael is a man. We know Agenor, Balthamel, Bilal, and Ishmael were all men.
Yeah.
But you're not quite sure about Raven, right?
We don't technically know Raven, Mogidian, or Asmodian. I don't know if any were described.
But we do know that Asmodian is a man, because Asmodian's the one that...
can teach Sidene.
Can teach Rand how to use Sidene. So we do know that he's a man.
Okay.
So anyways, I just wanted to catch up. Now I have a list of the Forsaken that you've either met or heard about, and we will continue to grow on that.
Right.
Alright.
I also just wanted to know, I did appreciate that Lanfear was just like, oh, I'm a day late. Like,
yeah.
She was really plotting as well.
Yep.
But then it's also to me, Tavirin.
Of course.
You would always be a day late.
Yeah.
You're just saying.
Oh, right. Let's move on to the next chapter, unless you have any other notes for this chapter. I do want to touch on something that you kind of skimmed over.
Yep.
Talking about when he was talking to High Lords Sunamon and Malon.
Yep.
And he's just telling them that they, you know, need to send barges to, like, barges of grain.
Yep.
To Fong. Not Fong. To Maeyn. And and no soldiers, and they were both like, "Well, the Lord High Lord Torian has interest in Maeyn," and that's when Rand straight up says he has interest in a young lady who has no interest in him back. That's his interest. He's a disgusting old man, and so that's where I was just listening to one of our earlier episodes. And it was when Torian came out and grabbed.
Okay.
Barrelane, right after the mirrors, you know?
Yep.
And so I wanted to touch on that. Yeah, Torian is trying to
control Barrelane,
and, you know,
it's affirmed.
Yeah.
Torian's
it's not a good thing.
This
is very sexual assaultiness shit, right?
So, and he's quite likely one of the richest, especially if, you know, I think he's Estienne's dad, so...
Yeah.
And I think he was described as one of the rich.
He's probably one of the wealthiest High Lords in Tyr.
Jerk.
And he is an absolute pile of a human being. All right, yeah, let's just move right on to Chapter 10, then.
The Stone Stands.
And I will say... this is top 5 chapters of this book for me.
Yeah?
It's a fun one.
Okay.
I like this chapter.
Rand opens the doors, only to see dead Aiel, along with 3 other gray men, with several Aiel spears in each of them. Some of the dead Aiel look as though they would never saw the gray men coming, so then I just was like, oh great, their superpower is to be super average in looks.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah. I mean, we got that. We got that in...
Perrin's Inn, right?
Yeah, I believe they were in Ilion, right?
Yeah.
Or were they in Tyr?
They're hunting for the horn.
But yeah.
They weren't hunting. She was just back to where she started. I think it was Ilion.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. Sorry, geography.
No, you're good.
Rand hears clashing of steel and clicking of hooves. Trollocs.
Yeah.
Great. A gong sounds in the stone, only to stop with lethal suddenness. And then someone else took over. And which is so sad. It's like they're doing the warning gong and someone just killed him.
Yeah.
Or a Trolloc, whatever. Rand takes on a fade, but many men are already down. Eventually he yells, "Rally to the stone! The stone stands!" And he keeps yelling all these encouraging words about protecting the stone. Ironic humor in that it is the words he heard used the night the stone fell. When he was, you know, part of the chaos.
Really, really, really fast. I want to just rewind just a little bit. Because so he sees this Murdral, and this Murdral is just tearing apart the defenders of the stone.
Oh, yeah.
And he like rips one guy's face off with his bare hands.
Yeah.
As he stabs another one in the throat, and I love this because I wanted to touch on it. "Fade!" Rand shouted. "Try me, Fade!" Fear rippled through Rand at the stair, sliding over the bubble of cold calm that encased him when he held sight in. "In the borderlands," they said, "the look of the eyeless is fear." The Murdral flowed toward him, and Rand leapt the dead man in front of the doorway to meet him, his boots skidding on bloody black marble as he landed. And I love that. Like, he jumps over, and then all of a sudden he's just like sliding towards the Murdral on blood. I love that description. But anyways, sorry, I had a...
You need to give the color. I'm doing a basic summary, so it's okay. So Rand keeps his cheers going, and sure enough, some defenders began yelling with him and helping him in the fight. So it worked. Rally cry.
Yep.
Super long fight scene, so I'm summarizing a lot. But it's the first true excitement of the book as well, so I can also understand where you're like, top 5 chapter. This is where it just, like, explodes.
I mean, that first chapter with the 3 bubbles of evils, that's an exciting chapter. But
yes.
But you're right. Ever since then, and it's been moving. I mean, that was almost 120 pages ago.
Yeah, good call.
That chapter, and so these past like over 100 pages have been pretty slow. It's a lot of setup. It's a lot of, you know,
just checking in with
people. A lot of recap, like RJ tends to do. So.
So Rand fights a murderer here, there, everywhere. Blades of black steel forged in Thakandor. Thakandor. Striking Rand's fire sword. Defenders die. Servants die. Noblemen and women die. Dark friends reveal themselves and start fighting people as well.
Yep. Yep.
Rand sees Moraine and Lan fighting. Lan is being attacked heavily, but Rand is helpless because he's basically being attacked by a Trolloc, and then thankfully another Trolloc axes the first, right?
Yeah. So he notices Lan and Moraine, and Moraine is basically just lighting these motherfuckers up on
fireball.
On fire, yeah. And the way he describes it is she's standing there with her hands held, or her head held high, and just Trollocs all around are just bursting into flames. And I love that imagery.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
That is really cool.
But it's still a lot. Like, they are very heavily attacked.
Yeah. And Rand's like he's already looks like he's bleeding, and there's he gets hit by an axe, like the blunt side of an axe, and Rand wants to go help them, but right then, three Trollocs, I think, three or five, come at him. And he takes one down, but as it falls, it trips him up.
Yeah.
And so he misses his next attack, gets pinned down by one that he actually did stab, and then the other one is coming in for the killing blow.
Yep.
When his head gets split right down the middle.
By
and
a different Trolloc.
And it's another Trolloc! And Rand thinks to himself, right, saved by a Trolloc. What the hell is going on right now?
Right.
What is going on right now? I don't know.
And now Lanfear appears, of course, and says, you build a hut of twigs when you could have the marble palaces at the snap of your fingers. And he asks her, well, why'd you help me by having that Trolloc attack the other one? And she denies interfering in any way for him.
Yep. If I take credit, you will expect it again, and that could be deadly. None of the others is really certain where I stand, and I like it that way. You can expect no open aid from me.
Right.
And then I love this part. He slams her up against the wall and wraps her up in air. Kind of like she did earlier to him, right?
Right.
And then she does it back to him. And she says, and I quote, anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
And that's exactly how she said it.
Yeah.
I mean, she's just telling him how it is and sings on.
No, she says, whatever you can do, loose there, I can do. And better.
And I think it's worth noting, she's not offering him help. I think it's great that she's revealing, like, I'm neutral. People don't know where I stand. But it's also worth knowing the other Forsaken could likely turn against her if they knew she was standing for Luz.
Yeah.
She then asks Lorand about Kalendor, just reminding him, hey, anyone can take it since you retrieved it, even Samael.
Yeah.
And at long last, Rand frets, runs immediately to his rooms, not noting the irony that Lanfear just helped him immensely.
Yes.
Because we all know the superpower he gets with Kalendor. Also, I was really confused because I thought he did have Kalendor, and I couldn't figure out why he wasn't channeling this whole time. And I'm like, so you literally left your room without Kalendor, you dummy.
Well, I mean, he has his
fire sword.
His power wrought fire sword that he's been using for a while now, right? Ever since
his Harrenmark sword melted.
So
I suppose.
And he's just gotten used to that. Like, Kalendor is still very new to him.
That's true.
So, yeah, and the one time he used it to kill Ishmael, he it scared the shit out of him.
Yeah.
The immense power that he had.
I
have the power!
And that is exactly what Rand looks like, is He-Man. Adam. Good news, everyone! Kalendor is still in his room, and he determines he must kill them all. And essentially, he goes outside in the halls and just beneath the ceiling, right above his head, as he's raising Kalendor, right?
Yeah.
Air slowly began to revolve, spinning faster, milling in streaks of red and black and silver. It roiled and collapsed inward, boiling harder, whining as it whirled and grew smaller still. Then he just has like a gut feeling to release it and basically sends a storm of lightning.
He just created this storm vortex.
Literal.
And he releases it, and it just, like, lightning just starts flying out of it, and it's going to
Myrdral and Trollocs all at once are just vaporized.
They're just getting hit by lightning bolts and just being blown apart. Like, they literally describe it as just being blown to pieces.
Yeah, and I described it as a beautiful picture.
And that's why this, like this scene here is pretty much why this is one of my favorite chapters in the entire book, because that is just great. And then he kills every single last one of them.
Yep, just like that. Lightning storm.
Yep.
That's all we needed.
Yep.
Anywho, Moraine comes on scene, looking shocked, saying, "What you have done, I would not have believed possible." Then she asks, "Well, are you well?"
Yep, Lan starts coming and she actually puts up a hand.
And Rand is feeling sad because here's this dead little girl and he attempts to channel life into her. But Moraine reminds him, there is no healing death and you are not the creator. And at last, Rand stops.
Yeah.
So there's actually a super sad moment.
It's a pretty horrifying scene. And if we just want to keep it like glossed over, I'm totally okay with it. Or if you want to talk about it.
No. Okay. I just think it's important to note, like,
he
realizes the depth, he should have moved sooner, and now, you know, not just all the noble men and women are dead, but children are dead too.
I do want to touch on it real fast. He's holding Kalendor, and he really does feel like he can do anything, even resurrect the dead with this. So he tries.
Right.
And it's gruesome, and it's horrific, and I hate this scene so much, and it has to be in the TV show.
Okay.
It has to be, because it's so crucial for Rand to learn that he can't do everything.
Right.
Even with Kalendor. And it takes this horrific event to prove it to him. And that's, I hate the scene so much, and it needs to be in the TV show. They have to nail this scene.
I will tell the director and see what we can do.
I did not realize you were on speaking terms with Rafe Judkins.
I just need to find their Instagram, that's all.
He's actually fairly active, and he will respond to fans from time to time. So.
All right, I'll get on that. Lan then says, he's explaining, because Rand's like, how the F did this happen? And Lan says, well, Trollocs came by 8 large grain barges that no one had questioned when they came downstream versus upstream.
Yeah.
And that were docked strangely as close to the stone as possible and didn't open its doors till night, as well as 30 train wagons full of half-men and Trollocs. And my gut feeling was, do you think this was the work of Taurian, and is he a dark friend?
Ooh, I don't. No.
Because I feel like this is Dark Friend stuff. This isn't just High Lords hating Rand. This is, you have to have a touch of darkness to know.
Oh, somebody definitely organized this. Yeah. Do you think it was Dark Friends, or do you think this was like Samael from Alien?
Oh, I don't trust these High Lords, but then again, I don't trust them. I'm going to say Dark Friends. Okay. Taurian. Dick.
And, I mean, who knows? There might be another Forsaken hidden among the...
Yes, this is true. There could be another Forsaken. It almost seems they all stick to their one city as well, except for maybe Lanfear. So, unless Rand is under their nose, they're not quite reaching out to murder him. Okay. Except with the Soulless, of course. Moraine takes Rand's weariness, and he tells her of Lanfear. Good job, Rand! Actually opening up to Moraine about crucial details.
This is important.
And Moraine is like, yeah, I doubt you could kill Lanfear yet. or that she'd kill you yet. And then reminds them there is little known of any of the Forsaken, in particular Lanfear. Rand announces to Moraine, I will reveal my plan tomorrow. But inside, he's thinking to himself, well, she'll only hear part of my big plan. Yeah. And tomorrow night, he will unleash another kind of lightning that might save him or kill him, whichever.
Yeah.
End scene. Whoa.
It's a great chapter. I really like that chapter. And you're right. I'm glad we were able to brush through that fast. We don't need to talk about all the different fight scenes. It's just, it's really exciting. And that's pretty much all it is. Just an exciting battle. The biggest things is like his interaction with Lanfear.
Yeah.
And
that there was some confusion within. I think knowing there's dark friends fighting, but you're right. Why are Trollocs fighting each other? Is it really because they're just, you know, bloodthirsty? But one killing, another Trolloc killing a Trolloc for Rand, that is fishy. I believe Lanfear is telling the truth. She didn't set that up, but someone did.
Well, she basically says, I can neither confirm nor deny
that. Oh, okay,
she
okay.
Because
she did conveniently appear after it happened.
Yeah.
Right? Not too long after it happened.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
So, no, I would assume, I think it's a safe assumption that she set that up. But
okay.
It seems like the Forsaken have control over the Murdral, which have control over Trollocs. So, yeah, she probably enlisted a couple of the Murdral. Yes, because the one in Kyrian is in this tiny little town called Tremalsian.
Tremalsian and Tremalking.
And then there's one on Tremalking, which is the island of the sea folk.
Okay. Yeah, I did skim over a lot of that. She's in love with the Dark One and is sure Rand / Luz Theramon, Luz Telamon will figure it out. But I don't know, Lanfear.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that's in your cards. Oh, map time.
So that's map time. That's Tremalking. And this is where, remember at the beginning of the story, Seroth was on one of these islands.
Yeah.
The Seanchan had taken over at least one of those small islands, if not the whole entire thing. So that is Tremalking.
Okay.
And that is where one of the statues is, and the other statue is right up around in this area.
So they can just have the power over the entire continent, essentially.
She's saying they can together challenge the
Dark One
or the Creator himself.
Ooh. This is intense.
She wants to be supreme leader.
Okay.
And she wants Luz Theramon to be her trophy husband, essentially.
Do it, Luz. Just kidding. Chapter 11, What Lies Hidden. Probably not the same as the movie What Lies Beneath, which is an excellent movie. Mm. But I will say, this is a long one. A lot happens in this chapter.
It's okay, yeah.
And it's another, it kind of builds. Kind of starts off okay, and then it gets way more exciting.
All right.
Egwene's perspective.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
She's going into Teleron Riad, but without the Tarangriel ring. So she's like, time for me to just do it.
She's trying it out by herself.
Avienda, her bestie, and Nynaeve and Elaine are all with her as she's about to go to sleep. Egwene is just reflecting and feels a little flicker of jealousy that Rand just did this powerful tactic against the Murdral and Trollocs. And she couldn't even see how he used the power. So I'm assuming she wants to be able to copy him in a way, or just understand.
She's extremely ambitious.
She is, and this is one of her, I feel like this is her strength. She can watch it and do it.
Yeah, no, she's extremely ambitious and she wants to know everything. Which, I respect that. She wants to be able to do everything. She wants to be the best at everything. She's a hard worker. She's very ambitious. Yeah, sure, there's some immaturity that she needs to work through. But no, she's a great character in that sense.
And as well, it gives us the timeline. So this is right after all the attacks, essentially.
Yeah, it's pretty much directly after.
Okay. Egwene has been reading Master Urien Ramovny's book, A Journey to Terabon, in order to prep herself for Teleron Riad. She's basically looking at a map, and There's a great circle, a king circle, and the panarches circle. And it sounds like these are all arenas for different types of events.
Yeah.
She marks a candle, wishing for a clock. This is kind of a cutesy scene. Elaine laughs about the idea of keeping a clock in a bedchamber, saying her mom has tons of clocks, but none for a bedroom. And then Egwene is grumbling, my dad had the only clock in the entire village, and yeah. I wish I had it.
Yeah.
And it was, I think this is a good reminder how differently they grew up. Oh, like, yeah. I forget. Like, I genuinely would forget well, that.
I mean, yeah, no, but Elaine, you know, daughter heir, she grew up in a palace.
Yeah, and she doesn't, I mean, as far as we can see, she's not complaining left and right about the dramatic difference.
No,
so.
No, she, I actually think she's kind of enjoying, like
rustic life.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, she's, again, another very intelligent, very ambitious character who wants to know everything.
Yep.
You know, Elaine and Egwene and Nynaeve, they all share that. They want to know, and they want to be the best. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
They're all full force,
yeah,
ready
yeah.
to do this.
It's, if they could just get past some immaturity issues, they would be like fucking Powerpuff Girls, man.
And we are getting glimpses that Avienda is starting to understand more of the complexities of Aes Sedai.
Yeah.
And she asks if anyone else can go with Egwene while using the ring. But then Nynaeve cautions there's a lot of unknowns about what could happen. Egwene's the one who actually understands Teleron Riad best. And then Avienda understands, mistakes could kill. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
This is one of those places.
Yeah.
There's a quick review of what Teleron Riad is, along with the reminder that it's been 473 years since Corian Nidiel was in the White Tower as the most recent dreamer. So it has been a while.
Yeah.
Do you think that number is significant? It hasn't quite been 500. Or is it just a random number?
What was the number, 400?
473. I think Egwene had to correct them. Like, they said 500 years, and she's like, actually, 473. Anyway, she thinks of the list of the other Tarangriel stolen by the Black Aja, likely other links to Teleron Riad. They found two of the stolen Tarangriel from Amako and Joya. So there was a 3-inch iron disc with spiral writing on the sides, as well as a clear amber plaque that could scratch steel, and it had a sleeping woman etched into the side. And Elaine had tried it out once, and they work.
Yeah.
They do work. So that's a good guess, the stolen Tarangriel. Had everything to do with Corian Nidiel and Teleron Riad, telling us this place is going to have a huge significance in this series, right?
Teleron Riad?
Yeah, it's that connector of all the worlds, basically.
Yeah, I think that we can assume that the world of dreams is going to have, it's going to be something that they use from time to time.
Egwene frets about running into the other black Aja. And Teleron Riad, thinking of Leandrin and Rihanna, Chesmal Emerin, Jean Cade.
Jean Cade?
Egwene insists she must go alone and concentrates on the maps, looking at the Panarch's palace and specifically a drawing of a giant bestial skeleton. She does ask what is a Panarch, and Elaine recites, a Panarch is equal to a king in another city, and describes that she is responsible for collecting taxes and he for spending them properly.
So the Panarch of Tenshiko is the equal of the king in authority. She is responsible for collecting taxes, customs, and duties, he for spending them properly, and she controls the civil watch and the courts, except for the high court, which is the king's. The army is his, of course, except for the Panarch's legion. I didn't really want to know, Egwene decides. Fuck you, Egwene.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was either, Egwene, but yeah. Egwene. So Egwene thinks of her recent dreams, so she's not asleep yet, and her recent dreams have mostly been of Rand, dreaming him tall as giant, crushing buildings beneath his feet.
Huh, what do you think that means?
I wonder if he becomes a giant and crushes buildings beneath his feet.
Maybe.
Like when Moraine became
a
giant.
But she didn't crush any buildings. She just walked over a guard tower.
But if Rand loses his temper, who knows? Or maybe it's like Zoolander and it's a building for release for ants. We don't need a building for ants. Anyway, Rand is in chains and screaming in another dream, which we've seen that in her testing dreams, right? He was captured. She dreams of Rand building a wall, correct? With her and Aline and others on the other side of him.
Yeah.
So he's building a wall in between them. She dreams of Aiel fighting each other, Matt wrestling a Siancian woman who tied an invisible leash to him. We've had other Matt and Siancian, I think, have been connected a few times in her dreams.
Huh.
A wolf she believes to be Perrin, because Perrin's a wolf, basically.
Yeah.
And she knows it. Fighting a man whose face kept changing. I don't know, Lanfear's face keeps changing.
Yeah.
But maybe, oh, I think we'll get to this later in this book. I have a small memory of another Forsaken coming our way.
Okay.
Galad is in her dreams, wrapping himself in white like a shroud. Is that like a death shroud? Is that the only shroud there is?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know exactly what a shroud is.
I don't know.
And Gawain with his eyes full of pain and hatred. Her mother weeping, and these dreams she knew to be sharp and mean something. I think she means all these dreams were sharp and mean something. So that's intense.
Yeah.
I like to detail her dreams out because I also believe her dreams mean
something. So you want to talk about these at all?
I mean, you can ask questions if you...
So Rand, tall as a mountain, walking through cities, crushing buildings beneath his feet. You think that he literally is going to become a giant at some point? Possibly with the power?
It could happen.
Okay. Rand in chains, and it was he who was screaming.
Yeah, that one seems very likely. Okay. Very literal.
Rand building a wall with him on one side and her on the other, along with Elaine and the other she could not make out.
So that one could be more symbolic, I suppose.
Yeah, that could be like building a wall. He's putting up a wall as to not let emotions out because he has to be this hard,
He has to do his duty, yep, whatever.
Emotionless leader. Okay. I mean, he is basically like, he knows that he is destined to fight the Dark One in the last battle, and the prophecies are pretty, maybe not overly clear, but they definitely imply that in order for him to save the world, he's going to have to die.
Yeah.
So I could see, like, with that knowledge, I could see hardening yourself, closing yourself off from emotion, breaking off ties, that remind you of being human and like just becoming basically like this emotionless stone, right? I can see that. Okay. She had dreamed of Aiel fighting each other, killing each other, even throwing away their weapons and running as if they had gone mad. Do you have any idea what that might be?
Yes and no. I feel like I'm still taking information from later in this book, possibly.
Yeah, there might be some of this that you learn a little bit later in this book.
So I think really I don't know what it means at this point.
And you already touched on the Mad and the Perrin, so I won't. And we already talked about the Galad.
Yeah.
You think that it might be like a death shroud, possibly?
That's the only shroud I ever hear described. Okay. Unless there's a baby shroud, I don't know.
Okay.
Rebirthing shroud. Is this like conversion therapy?
Maybe. Okay. That's pretty much it. We don't really have to talk about Gawain with the... Because you have a vague memory of what that might happen.
I know what that means. And I know what her mom means.
And then her mother weeping, So, okay. Yeah, so... continue.
Okay. She keeps focusing on that room in the Pan Archer's Palace with a skeleton and starts taking slow, deep breaths. And it works. She's asleep and she's next to the roped-off areas. Inside the Pan Archer's Palace. Basically, it's like a museum, right? So people can only admire the goods. It's typical RJ description of her clothes, in which she has maiden clothes on, but in red silk, and she allows them to change to brown, then reminds herself, no, I'm in a city, and switches to clothing similar to Fael's choices. She tells herself it's foolish to worry about her dress, as no one will see me except in their dreams, and few ordinary dreamers reach here. I could be naked! Careful what you wish for, brat.
Yeah.
She admires the collection in the Pan Archer's Palace, thinking of Romavny's writings about bones of animals no living eye has seen, and the Quendalar figures. So Quendalar is that really? It's what the discs are made of for the Dark One's
prison.
Yeah. Egwene recognizes some Angreal figures and is drawn to a broken figure of a woman holding a spear. And that's where I was like, gasp! The twin to the crystal outside of Carrion, but in miniature. Maybe.
Okay.
So that Tremalking one. She impulsively follows the pole and touches this particular item, assuming it to be Tarangreal, then feels the power surging into her, then back and forth to the figurine. And at the same time, she's experiencing shooting pains in her head as it keeps going back and forth. So she drops it and the crystal shatters. And she reminds herself, yeah, I'm in. This is a Tarangreal. This is always dangerous.
Yeah.
To use them without knowledge. Then she looks up and the statuette is back on the shelf, whole. And then she also is reminded, I don't know much about Talaronriad, which is also dangerous.
Yeah.
Be careful. So she figures that out quickly. Egwene wanders through the palace, seeing the one ordinary person who must be dreaming, calling for Aldra. I've become Lord Captain of the Panarch's Legion. And I was just wondering, do you think we'll meet him in real life? He just disappears. He's just a...
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe.
Who knows?
Apparently there's a Legion. Egwene goes outside the Panarch's palace. She's atop a hill, the city of Tanchico appearing larger than Camelin. She thinks that if she were a real dreamer, Avienda had said wise ones could interpret those particular dreams. And then she's wishing, how do I find myself? Oh, no, she doesn't wish anything. She's just thinking about the wise ones. And when she finds herself in the Aiel Waste, seeing a large boar hunted by a young maiden close to Egwene's age. The woman stares at her and Egwene stares back, but figures, nope, just an ordinary Aiel who dreamed herself into Talaronriad. So Egwene goes ahead, wishes herself back to the palace. Start over again, Egwene goes back outside. And jumps as a screaming man plummets from the sky but disappears before hitting the ground.
Yeah.
Another reference to, you better be glad you woke up because that would have been real.
Yeah.
You would have died here. She keeps considering where she should go. Lots of city descriptions, and she's really not sure what is important with what she's observing because, like, sometimes she'll look at stuff and colors or patterns change when she looks back.
Yeah. I mean, not everything is, like...
It's like it's not stable.
Yeah.
But it's mostly the same, and to her it's not significant. It doesn't seem important beyond, really it's just a reminder she does not know the basics of Talaronriad. And then she comes upon a stable full of rats who are just staring at her, right? They're just sitting there staring at her, and she takes a step back and again thinks a wise one might know why there are rats. She does remember, she does have a reference to like the Dark One uses...
Rats and ravens. Yep.
But she thought of the wise one, so she's again transported back to the waste. But this time, that boar-like creature is running toward her and has way too many teeth. And thankfully, it runs through the rocks, and there's a white-haired woman looking directly at Egwene. Older this time.
Yeah.
Egwene says sorry and switches to Aiel clothes, probably just trying to like comfort this woman.
Yeah.
Like, you're dreaming. Yeah. Let me make my dream self look cuter and more understandable. However, it offends the maiden who says, you have no right to wear Cadensor, girl. And suddenly Egwene is naked. Her feet are burning in the hot desert sun.
Yeah.
Isn't that fabulous?
That's hilarious.
I think so.
And she's like, what the fuck?
So, surprise, apparently you can alter other people in Talaronriad. And this woman is not just a dreaming, she is here. So Egwene manages to get dressed and make the other woman's own garments vanish, and again wishes herself back to Tanchico. But in a moment's hesitation, very important detail, she thought she saw a golden-haired woman, Birgit, back. You're right? Arthur Hawkwind's friend. Saying, you are letting wild fancies take you. You have been listening to too many of Tom Marilyn's stories. I love that Birgit referenced Tom Marilyn. I mean, it makes sense because she'd want to connect to Egwene in a way Egwene can understand, but it's funny.
Wait, doesn't she think that to herself?
Oh, shoot. I misinterpreted that then.
Oh, no, I don't know. I don't remember. It's been...
No, that would make more sense. I was like, how would Birgit know Tom Marilyn?
Yeah, no, she just barely just glanced for, like, the...
And she did see Birgit back in Homan's head. She saw the shooting.
Did she? You're right. Yeah. You're right.
But it wasn't much.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is more interesting than that. Birgit is some way, shape, or form still watching over Egwene, possibly.
Well, maybe.
Something.
So, yeah.
Or available in Teleron Riad, like, which
it seems like
sense.
She's available in Teleron Riad.
Okay. Anyway, Egwene is back in the palace because she knows how to get back there. She reminds herself, I don't have much time. She takes immediate leave to the city and continues her important task. Find out if Black Aja are in Tanchico. Egwene frets about the difference of time and sees a woman in green fitting clothes with dark braids look around, then leap up and continue going up. So Egwene catches on, hey, I can fly in Teleron Riad. Why not? It's a dream world after all. And yeah, Egwene leaps up to fly and she's looking down at the city searching for any cue of Black Aja. However, after a bit she realizes, oh, I'm making myself a huge target, aren't I? And she comes back to the ground while calling herself a fool. I mean, she tried. I gotta give it to her.
Yeah.
That would have been really tempting. But at this point, coming down the street, an older woman in loose-fitting clothes and white hair turns a corner and heads directly to Egwene. So again, Egwene's singing, it's just a dream person, they'll disappear. Only the woman keeps heading directly to her, and Egwene feels some fear. The woman calls for Egwene, put your feet on the ground, girl. I had enough trouble finding you again without you flying off like some bird when I do. The woman begins talking, and Egwene realizes it is the same maiden from the waste that she had just visited, although older.
Yeah.
Here we are.
It is awesome.
I know. This is where I just think, this is where her chapter just is so exciting.
Yeah, it gets fun right now.
The woman affirms she's the same woman from the other place, but didn't actually complete her sentence, but likely she's living out some scene in her youth when she goes to Teleron Riad, which is why she was younger at first. She is a wise one. It's Aemys of the Nine Valley Sept of the Tardad Aiel. And Egwene introduces herself as Green Aes Sedai, sticking with her story.
Keep consistent.
The woman again notes that Egwene is powerful, but must learn the rules of Teleron Riad, and chides her for flying. So, and you know, like I said, this whole build-up, Egwene is more aware than ever how much she doesn't know.
Yeah, definitely.
But Egwene asks her for help finding the Black Aja in Tanchico, to which the woman sighs and says, it's true. There's shadow runners in the White Tower. And that makes me think, you know, I like that name, Shadowrunner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, great. Is this another one of the Aiel prophecies or something coming true? Aemys comments that Tanchico is dying, eating itself, and a darkness is
from
here.
Within, yeah.
It's an evil. And that's where I was like, oh, okay, so there likely is a Forsaken in Tanchico, probably.
Okay, probably.
Or another seal to the Dark One's prison that's breaking. One of the two. Both, probably.
Yeah.
They seem to go along.
Those are both really good theories.
Aemys insists Egwene must come to her in the Threefold Land, and word will be spread that Aemys wants Egwene Alvir sent to Cold Rock's Hold. And Aemys mentions, I'm in Iridian now, but I will be back before you arrive. At this moment, though, Egwene feels a pull, and the woman tells her, no, wait! And again calls for her to come to Threefold Land, come learn and see. And so obviously Egwene's waking up.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me.
And Egwene found a dreamer teacher.
I think so. I think that's a good assumption.
And I just noted it started off super boring, but got so interesting toward the end. Aemys reminds me of someone named Murr who lives in Bemidji. She's the former cross-country ski coach.
Okay.
With white hair, and I could see her being that person. Just like she's in cross-country ski club, and I see her from time to time. But, like, I think she has that coaching attitude. Anyway.
Nice.
So I can picture Aemys to a T. So, yeah.
Perfect.
It was good. This was a good chapter.
Yeah. No, these were three fun chapters. We got some good information. And now the story is actually starting to move.
Yes,
I agree. It's been a while. We've been kind of just stuck in the stone. Not a lot has been happening. And now we're starting to move. So, yeah, it's starting to get really exciting.
Kind of back to my thought that Teleron Riad is important. I did make a note that I forgot to read earlier, but it is as close to the internet as they have, or cell phone, if you think about it.
Yeah?
They rely on pigeons, and they have to send 3 pigeons and hope they're not intercepted.
Yeah?
So, versus
and they,
that...
And they never really know if they got there, right?
Right. So, anyway, or, yeah, I do think it's a crucial tool. So, that's my thoughts. It was kind of, we discussed as we went. I don't know if there's other things you thought.
No, I mean,
I look forward to Amy's, of course.
Amy's is a cool character.
Yeah, badass.
And we're going to find out a little bit more in the next couple chapters, I think, about her.
Fuck, Mary, Kill?
Fuck, Mary, Kill.
Yeah.
Do you have yours?
I'll start.
Okay.
This is a first, but I'll fuck Lanfear, because she's just something else.
She was
totally helping Rand, even though the whole time denying it. But there's something almost hilarious about that.
No, she's fun.
Supposed to be an intense battle scene, but I found a lot of humor.
Okay.
Mary Amy's. I like that she called out Egwene. I mean, she did. And Egwene wasn't even really bothering me too much in this chapter, but it was like Egwene needs someone to keep her in check.
Yes.
And I appreciate that Amy's is probably that person, and it's kind of sweet. We know Amy's is a wise one, an older person, but she has a sweet part of her that does like to reminisce about her youth, being a maiden hunting in the Aiel Waste. It was cute.
Yeah.
And then Kill, I'm going to do a large one, but Taurian / High Lords, all of them.
Just all of them?
I kind of do blame them for Trollocs, which again implies someone in there is probably Dark Friend to have access.
That's a good possibility.
So that's my Kill.
All right. I will fuck Rand, because he is a badass. I really enjoy, like, him just, like, first of all, he notices the Gray Man, and then he's like, oh, shit. So he goes outside, and he sees the Fae, and he jumps over a body, try me, Fae, and slides. And, yeah, he's a badass. I'm going to marry Moraine. I'm going pretty obvious this round. I think she's a badass, and...
Fireballs.
The fireballs, and then, like, even afterwards, when she's just like, Rand... You cannot heal the dead. You cannot do this. You cannot... No, this is not right. This is not good. And... This is kind of hard because there's not really any unlikable people in these chapters. Other than the High Lords. The High Lords are a piece of shit. And I support your decision and just wiping them right off the face of the earth. I guess I'll go ahead and... I guess I'll go ahead and kill Joya Byer again.
Yeah, she was
pretty sure
still,
I killed her a couple times already, but
she's still pretty nasty.
Yeah,
so.
she's a horrible, horrible, horrible person. So yeah, I'll go ahead and kill her again.
Perfect.
So yeah. Alright. With that,
everyone be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Glee Man's Apprentice.
The Glee Man's Apprentice is available on Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Breaker, and Radio Public.
Our theme song is written by Twitch Avery and performed by Andrel, Bard of Time.